Doug Adler's with Raymond James East Lansing. Doug, how are you?
Hey, Tony. Good morning.
I got you a job, I guess.
Yeah, as long as I'll take it.
Hey, let's talk about so far what you've seen on the market here in the early portions of January.
Yeah, the market thus far off to a pretty good start. And historically, that's important. There's nothing scientific about it from the standpoint of if you're up in the first week of the year, you're going to have a good year. But statistically, if the first week is good, January on balance tends to be pretty good. And when that happens, the growth rate for the market over the year is typically pretty good. So we'll take it. It's a bonus. You know, a little bit deeper than that, a little more cerebral than that, Tony. I think what's happening is, to some degree, you know, Europe's been quiet, and we talked a lot about that in the fourth quarter of 11. Investors are looking at what's coming out of the U.S. in terms of economic data, and it's pretty good.
Will the spike in crude as well as the spike in gasoline prices affect the market?
There's no question about it. I mean, you know, all things being equal, lower taxes are better than higher taxes, at least in my view. And gasoline really is a direct tax on the economy because it essentially confiscates capital from the consumers, money that they can spend. And so that's going to be something we're going to have to watch. You know, you have things going on in Iran that are a risk for crude. And if we were to get some kind of, let's say, another $20, $30 spike in crude right now, Tony, is a little bit over $100 a barrel. We're going to have some challenges there because that starts to push gas towards $4 a gallon again.
Mike Burrows, an economics professor at Harvard University, recently wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal talking about an exit strategy from the euro. And I quote, "The euro can be phased out the same way Europe's individual currencies were. The bonds of troubled member states would benefit as a result." How would the market react to the euro being phased out?
You know, I think the market can react to anything, really. I mean, there would be certainly a period of adjustment. All things, you know, being equal, meaning do we keep the euro or does the euro ultimately go away? If it goes away, there's going to be consequences. There's no question about that. You know, the Germans, as an example, which really have been the financial backing for the euro, I guess France would be second. But the German economy, Tony, is 85% exports. And so if they went back, the Germans, let's say, to the Deutschmark, historically their currency has been very strong, which makes their goods and services expensive in other countries that have, you know, less valued currencies. So you've got a lot of, this is why the whole thing with Southern Europe, with Greece and Italy and Spain, Portugal, why the northern countries are so anxious about what's going on there, is one is trade, and the second one is that their banks are, you know, really massively in dollar terms or euro terms exposed to those countries. So it'll be messy if we get there. Now, ultimately, if that's where it needs to go, the markets, I think, will kind of force that outcome, but I don't see that as a pretty ride.
It's been ugly over there. If it turns uglier and more countries fail, what happens on Wall Street?
Buckle up. You know, it probably won't be good. Here's what's probably, what we're going to be looking for over the first 3 to 6 months. I mean, this is what participants are going to be wondering the weakness in Europe. And this morning, Germany came out, and their fourth quarter gross domestic product was down negative slightly, just 0.25%. But nonetheless, for the year, they were running at 3% growth. Fourth quarter, they actually contracted. So you're probably starting to see some of the fallout of all the upheaval that they're going through in Europe. And if Europe slides into a recession, China sends more stuff to Europe than they do to the United States. They're a bigger trading partner than the U.S. is. So if Europe goes into recession, then you probably have a lot of pressure on China. I don't think they go into recession, but they certainly would likely contract. And then what does that do to the U.S.? So this whole, you know, globalization, there's risk to that. The other side of the argument is that the U.S. is gaining speed, and it's going to have enough, you know, kind of oomph to keep the global economy chugging along. And I'll tell you, there's some good things. I mean, people don't really talk about this much, but if you look at, like, personal consumption, you know, we all have heard the consumer's broke and they don't have a job and they've got a mortgage, you know, 10 times more expensive than are larger than their house is worth. You know, stuff like this, kind of exaggerated things. Personal consumption in this country since 08, which is when the financial crisis was going on with the banks here, it's up, you know, $700 million. Business capital expenditures, they're at an all-time high, like $1.5 trillion. Banks are have increased lending 22 quarters in a row. You know, keep hearing the banks aren't lending, they're not lending. It's actually 22 quarters in a row they have, and they're running at a 10% annual growth rate. So there's a, you know, it's never the cup completely empty or completely full. There, you know, there's always pros and cons, and we're hearing a lot about the negatives, but really, you know, those numbers I just gave you, that's pretty good stuff, and there's good things going on. So that's the battle. Can the U.S. kind of pull the rest of the world along and keep it from kind of falling off the economic cliff?
Doug Adler is with Raymond James in East Lansing. As banks prepare to complete their reports on fourth quarter results, final bonus decisions for 2011 are still up in the air. But from what I understand from this story from Liz Rappaport and Colin Barr, they may be at their lowest since 2008. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's probably going to be the case. You know, bonuses tend to be a significant piece of the compensation pie, and for a variety of reasons. One is just earnings, you know, the most important one, but public perception, too, is, I think, another one. And you're going to see bonuses that have traditionally been, in a lot of ways, you know, seem outlandish. They're going to be dramatically reduced, but, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be starving that's running the major banks in this country.
Finally, Doug, what's fixed income trading revenue?
Fixed income trading revenue, depending on the firm, can mean a lot of different things, Tony. Typically what that is government bond trading,
okay,
corporate bond trading, mortgage-backed securities, which are just mortgages of, you know, folks that, let's say, they live around Lansing, and those mortgages are pooled together into a basket, and then they're sold, and they're collateralized by the house. I mean, it can get, you know, deep in terms of, you know, how not intertwined, but how creative the products are. But as basic as government bonds trading every day, you know, government bonds trade like mad. It's much larger. The bond market is much larger than the stock market. And firms make a lot of money off of fixed income. It's getting harder now because interest rates are so low. What they call the spreads or the margins are being compressed. You know, the 10-year Treasury bond, U.S. Treasury bond, it's yielding around 2%. It's crazy. But fixed income is a big piece of the puzzle for firms.
All right, Doug Adler is the Senior Vice President for Investments for Raymond James in East Lansing. Thanks, Doug.
Hey, thank you, Tony. Speaking of the banks real quick, J.P. Morgan reports Friday, and so for, you know, folks that are listening that are investors, that might be one to watch.